I am Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the virtual CISO moment. Matt Winkler joins us. He is an analytical security and privacy leader. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
So would love to hear the story of your cyber journey, how you got started, why you got into this cyber stuff to begin with, because I know when I was growing up, I wasn't thinking about being in cyber, but part of that is because cyber didn't exist for another 20 or 30 years. But what got you into it, and tell us about your path to where you're at today.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I think, you know, I got into security by way of technology. I always really loved, taking things apart and rebuilding them. My Lego sets and Erector sets barely ever looked like the picture on the front of the box. And so that tinkering eventually led me into technology. You know, how can I build things? How can I make things work? And then it eventually led me into, okay, well, how can I, you know, like those Legos and Erector sets, how can I use what I have, perhaps in a way that it wasn't intended, to do the things that I wanted to do? Whether that was something in my imagination or something else that I had seen or whatever. And so that using something in a way that it perhaps wasn't intended is how I sort of found my way into security. And so I still love tinkering. Mm-hmm. I still have a lot of my Lego sets and whatnot.
I don't think I have mine anymore, but I might somewhere.
No, I mean, like, I always love seeing folks like Gary Haislip and his, like, huge, you know, Star Wars destroyers and whatnot that he's still building. It's just fun to see him in, and that, you know, there's so many of us out there still love tinkering with stuff like that. But yeah, you know, it started there, and I've always sort of found myself at the intersection of technology and security or and business. So, you know, it started out, you know, doing, you know, IT help desk types of stuff, mm-hmm. You know, working through some security awareness and risk stuff at a bank, you know, eventually sort of bounced over into technology, space, but then, you know, working on the implementation side of the software house. So essentially doing that consulting, that intersection. That's where I really figured out that, you know, being strictly technical probably wasn't my my forte. And so that sort of led me towards where I've been, you know, the head of security for a small business, which, you know, you have to be very tight with the business when you're head of security for a small business. Mm-hmm. Same with my most recent role at Equifax as a BISO. You know, the goal of that is to, you know, be that intersection of the business and security. And so, you know, looking for my next role at the moment. But yeah, that's kind of how I got where I am.
I noticed in your history that you have put in some time at a couple of banks. Mm-hmm. And I love to bring that up because I'm former CISO for a bank and I VCISO now for a couple of credit unions. And I firmly believe that it is in the banking world that is where an information security professional really learns about risk, because that's what banks and credit unions are all about. They're all about mm-hmm. managing risk and all that. Did you feel that being a part of those institutions helped to mature your understanding of risk?
Absolutely. I think it was interesting because I really got some of my first big taste of compliance there as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that was, you know, post Dodd-Frank. And so there was really a big emphasis on, you know, a lot of the compliance. But as a part of that, there was a lot of push to do, you know, real risk assessments, mm-hmm. and really document that and have a risk management program, as opposed to, yeah, we've got this generic risk register where we, you know, chart some stuff down just to check the box. So it was really at those places where I learned sort of how to identify risk, how to parse out that inherent risk versus, you know, all right, well, what can we do about it to find that residual risk? You're exactly right. It was there where that really matured.
Yeah, and literally just had a conversation with one of the folks that works with me a couple of days ago about just risk philosophy, and that the exact same thing came up. The statement I said was when I was CISO for the bank, that was when I really matured in my risk philosophy and my risk view. And it helps small and mid-sized businesses too, because they're so busy like dealing with just trying to keep the business running and growing and all that sometimes they don't understand that there's a lot of different layers to information security risk beyond having a firewall and antivirus. So
yes.
Well, when we come back in just a few seconds, I'm going to ask you about small and mid-sized businesses, which you think is one of the most, or a couple, if you want, significant cybersecurity threats to small and mid-sized businesses today. We'll pick that up in just a moment. vCISO Services is a small, specialized, veteran-owned information security firm with a calling, founded on Christian values and focused on the needs of small and mid-sized businesses. Our passion is to help small and mid-sized businesses gain a fighting chance in an increasingly hostile cybersecurity threat environment by providing executive part-time virtual CISO services, information security risk management services, and CISO advisory services. Check them out at vcisoservices.com. All right, Matt, you've had 32.8 seconds. What's your view on cybersecurity risk for small and mid-sized businesses?
Yeah, I think, you know, you point out sort of that risk card, and you mentioned just before the break how small and mid-sized businesses and how they work with risk. I think the challenge that I've seen with a lot of the small and mid-sized businesses is the lack of focus on risk. Their focus, in my experience, tends to be more on that compliance side of things. Right. They say, you know, we have to run really lean. We have to, you know, our focus is growing the business or what have you. And I've even seen this at large companies, but they say, in order to do that, we have to focus on what is absolutely necessary and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And so from a challenge standpoint, I see them focusing on, or at least in my experience, hyper-focusing on compliance. And that, like I said earlier, that risk assessment sort of becomes a box to check as opposed to a real understanding of what are our critical assets, how are we protecting them, or perhaps not. And so, I think that's one of the places where, you know, I tried when I've been in those sorts of roles to say, we're not going to use that risk assessment just as a box to check. We have mm-hmm. to do it. From a compliance standpoint, the compliance is driving it. You know, customers are demanding SOC 2 or HIPAA or FedRAMP or whatever the case may be. But as long as we're going to go through the exercise of maintaining our compliance or gaining our compliance, let's not just check the box. Let's use that as an exercise to try to understand. And then, you know, generally, small and mid-sized businesses have a higher risk tolerance than those larger organizations. So they can at least decide, hey, this is a risk that we have. We're going to accept it. Cool, fine by me. But, you know, as long as you've gone through that exercise, I think that's what's the important part.
So I want to kind of merge a little bit here. That's great information. Got me thinking. As we're recording this a couple of days prior to when it's actually going out. It's still the SolarWinds complaint against the CISO, or maybe former CISO there, mm-hmm. is still top of mind. And one of the things that I am looking very much to see as it comes out in this whole legal process, because I want to remind everybody that innocent until proven guilty, or if proven guilty. It's like, so don't be, there's a lot of different views and this and that, but everybody has their day. But what I don't see coming out of the complaint, and what I hope comes out in court, is some of that process you were just talking about, where it's you identify the risk, which it's clear that they did, and they convey the risk, and which I think they did. And then the decision makers make a decision whether or not to accept the risk and the reason why that they accepted the risk. That part I think is missing, at least what I don't see in the complaint. And the reason why I bring this up is that you just went through that whole very well, by the way, whole from beginning to end, talking about risk for small and mid-sized businesses. I wanted to emphasize that this is not a problem just for small businesses. This happens across the entire spectrum.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think what we're seeing play out is the SEC trying to pin or trying to gain clarity on who owns risk. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the part that's really trying to, you know, really sort of the issue that I'm sort of circling around here. There's lots of things, but the thing that I'm sort of picking at is it seems like risk was identified and, you know, brought to attention and, you know, either ignored or accepted or what have you. But that the SEC is articulating that, well, security owns that risk. And it's, you know, been my perspective and how I've always been taught that security team is risk assessors,
right?
And we own the risk for the controls that we own and operate.
Right.
But you know, especially in the case where, you know, you talk about the governance process in any business, large or small, there are exceptions made. There's risk accepted in there,
And that's completely fine. If you document it, it's completely fine to accept a risk if you understand the risk that you're accepting.
That's right. And you know, that's done every day in every, you know, business around, you know, I've had the distinct pleasure of being on the receiving end of a lot of third party risk assessments from large financial institutions. Yeah. Right. and they, you know, they're always asking about this control or that control or what have you. They ask if you have a governance process. Everybody knows that these organizations are accepting risk and that there's, you know, controls in place, but in some places there are exceptions to those controls. It's important to have them documented, but it's, you know, rarely ever in my experience security that's accepting the risk versus the business who should be accepting the risk. So I think it'll just be interesting to see how that kind of plays out here. And how this sort of lands and the ramifications of what that means about who in the future should be accepting risk for a business.
Well, I think the first thing would be that no matter who is accepting the risk, that it's understood and documented by all. And I think that might've been missing here. And maybe there's something different between what the SEC thinks and what the rest of the world thinks. I don't know, but I agree with you. It's like, I've always seen the CISO, and by extension for the SMB world, the virtual CISO, as the risk translator. So my responsibility to let the business know that these are the risks to your information, and not just from a cyber standpoint, but, you know, so not just technical, but also processes, procedures, all of that, paper even. I'm going to do the best that I can to my ability, because that's my job, to identify those risks. I'm going to do the best that I can to my ability, because that's my job, to translate those risks to you. And now what I've done is that I have given you all the information that you, the C-suite and the board of directors, need to know in order to make a risk-informed decision. You're going to make that decision. I'm going to document in my risk register, okay, I said this was a high risk. They decided that they were going to accept it. These are the reasons why. Everybody's happy. I think that there are elements of that missing. But what I try to do with small and mid-sized businesses is to teach them to follow the same process. It doesn't have to be as complicated,
right?
But the basis has to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, exactly like you said, identify, document, and decide. Like, however you want to do it, is simple. Boil it down to as simple or as complex as you need it to be for your organization. Because I've done it with companies that are less than 100 people and over 10,000 people. And it's vastly different, but at the end of the day, you're identifying the risk, you're documenting it, and you're deciding what to do with it. You know, are you mitigating it? Are you accepting it? Are you transferring it? Whatever.
So for small companies on the smaller side of the spectrum, since that's what the primary focus of this podcast is, what did you see as like being an effective strategy to help convey the risks? I would imagine that part of it has to do with what you were talking about before, that small businesses, particularly startups, risk is their business. They are I won't say risk adverse, but they have a higher risk tolerance.
Yeah.
How do you convey to them the security risk environment to an appropriate level that they can make decisions?
For sure. I think the experience that I've had was very informal. You know, the leadership communicated to me very early on and very explicitly, we have an extremely high risk tolerance. We're in growth mode. Our focus is hyper-focused on the product, revenue, and growth. So there are going to be things that we need to do, and there are going to be things that we want to do, but those are going to have to get prioritized within the context of all of the other things that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I said, okay, you know, that's fine. And the conversation went towards, well, here is what the risk really looks like. I was reading the book on FAIR at the time, but that was,
thinking about FAIR.
It was way too much for this organization. It was worthwhile in the context of, like you said, as I'm trying to articulate this risks environment and this philosophy to them, you know, how do I make sure how to do it correctly without overcomplicating it? Mm-hmm. But you know, just saying, hey, here's what this really means. You know, boil it down. They were, the leadership was tech savvy, so I could, you know, speak in tech terms. One less thing to translate. But I knew that very frequently they were just going to say, "Yep, we accept that risk. Like, let's move on." Mm-hmm.
But then you documented it.
Absolutely. I documented it and I said, all right, great. You know, this is going in, you know, we essentially did a risk assessment and then sort of a follow-up addendum as opposed to having like a risk register at the time. And so, but a lot of the risk that I say lucky enough to deal with, because this is where I really sort of like made that jump into, you know, from, you know, technology professional to business, is the commercial risk. There was a lot of situations in which our customers or potential customers had expectations or demands or requests of us as an organization. From a security perspective, they said, we need you to do this because you're going to have, you know, X, Y, or Z data of ours. And so the security risk really became a commercial risk, mm-hmm. because the customer said, we're not going to do business with you if you don't have, you know, DLP or whatever the case was at the time. So, you know, keying into that sort of side of things was really important for me to say, you know, our customer has said we need to have this capability. Here are a couple of different ways we might be able to accomplish that. You know, kind of taking a good, better, best mm-hmm. approach. And then to tossing it up to the leadership and saying, you know, here's my recommendation and here's why, but mm-hmm. you know.
And that's a feature of one who has matured in the information security space. You can always see that someone who's less mature will more or less say, this is a huge risk. We don't have DLP. We really need to put it in. It's going to cost some money, but I'm guaranteeing you that it'll be better. Well, okay. But by taking that translation, as I was talking about beforehand, and translating into things that they really care about. They care about money. They care about, well, okay, at the very least, and I agree with you too, it's like most of the things, it's not worth running a full fair analysis, but you could do sort of a very high level quasi-quantitative analysis and say, you know what, I think that our exposure is, well, maybe $50,000 over the year, but and this is going to cost us $10,000. So just in general terms, when all is said and done, we're saving $40,000. Are those real dollars? No, but it's just based on what we're talking about, risk and risk exposure. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, what you're doing is you're talking their language, which is what you were doing, and you get a lot more traction that way. At least that's, I think, the secret sauce.
Yep, totally agree.
So a lot of stress involved with cybersecurity, and certainly when you're talking to the board or the C-suite and trying to get some stuff done. What's one of the things that you do to get away and decompress from all of that stress?
I spend a lot of time, you know, doing a lot of other things, like you said, to decompress. So whether it's cooking, or I love getting my hands dirty working on cars. I've got a bunch of buddies. We'll go, you know, tear apart a car, put it back together, and go for a drive.
See, whenever I tried to do that, I had spare parts. It never worked right.
You know, it always ends up that there's one or two, and you're like, well, is this really important or not? We did once tear apart a water pump and radiator on a car 3 times because every time we put it back together, we found a problem. So we had to tear it all apart again and put it all back together. Plus volunteering. I'm a board member for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America, and recently became a volunteer coach for my alma mater's rifle marksmanship team.
Awesome. Awesome. Future plans? You mentioned that you're in the market for a new role.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what is next. I had originally, you know, years ago thought, you know, CISO is my path, and sort of all, you know, paths converge there.
But now SolarWinds kind of knocked that down.
Well, I think there's definitely a lot of people asking that question of themselves right now.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for me, the last couple of roles I've had have really opened my eyes to, you know, security is what I do, you know, or sort of how I do what I do. But like what I do is, you know, I enjoy, you know, building programs. I enjoy, you know, growing them. I've had the pleasure of working for a lot of small businesses. And so, you know, seeing them grow and helping them grow has been really fun. That's sort of like the what, and it's sort of opened my eyes to, I think there are a number of other, you know, paths out there for me. CISO was originally the one, but, you know, I, you know, couldn't find myself at a security product organization doing any number of roles there, or, you know, I really like the BISO role as well, sort of getting to, you know, whereas the CISO sometimes has to stick to the security guns, the BISO specifically sort of given the latitude to, you know, have one foot on each side of the fence.
You know, I often have thought in the past about what am I going to do when I retire? And the couple of problems with that, first of all, I don't know if I'm ever going to retire.
Right.
But my kind of a dream I have is that since I grew up in the networking side, it's like, I'd like to go back to being a network engineer, not worry so much about security anymore. Just, you know, when I was early in my career, I think it was not early, but in the mid 2000s is when I realized that my career had shifted more from getting people to talk to each other to getting people to not talk to each other. And when I had that realization, it was like almost like a little thing died. So I think I'd like to get back to the point of like just getting people to talk to each other. You got the security stuff, let them handle it and all that. It's like, you know, I'll get you guys connected, make sure we got a link light, make sure we're routing stuff properly. Bada bing, I'm done. That's it. So, but we'll see. you know, I love the security world too.
I love
Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed the conversation. Loved your insights on risk. Had no idea that we were going to go with the SolarWinds route, but I think that it was appropriate given how the conversation went.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Greg.
All right, everybody. Stay secure.